Hey, this is Jeremy. Just wanted to hop on before the episode started with a few announcements. We really want to hear from you, and perhaps the best way to do that, we actually have a subreddit now. It's just r/polyphonicpress, and I'll leave a link to it in the show notes. But it's always been my dream to have a community where we can all get together and talk about the albums that we review and just music in general. So if you want to join the community and start the community, really, because it's quite small right now, it's just r/polyphonicpress. And you can always help out the show in various ways. You can check out our Patreon and get these episodes the day before that they go live, and leave a rating and a review on Apple Music or Spotify or wherever you're listening. Those are great ways to get in touch with us as well. That's it. I just wanted to say that. And now on to the episode. Thank you.
Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Steely Dan, Can't Buy a Thrill.
Oh, all right. I do know this album.
I know some songs from it.
Yeah, I know the album quite well. It's funny, I was just listening to a playlist on Spotify of like my earliest musical influences. This album's on there, so.
Okay, so, well, this is what it says on allmusic.com. It says, so Walter Becker and Donald Fagen were remarkable craftsmen from the start, as Steely Dan's debut, Can't Buy a Thrill, illustrates. Each song is tightly constructed with interlocking chords and gracefully interwoven melodies, buoyed by clever, cryptic lyrics. All of these are hallmarks of Steely Dan's signature sound, but what is most remarkable about this record is the way it differs from their later albums. Of course, one of the most notable differences is the presence of vocalist David Palmer, a professional blue-eyed soul vocalist who oversings the handful of tracks where he takes the lead. Palmer's very presence signals the one major flaw with the album. In an attempt to appeal to a wide audience, Becker and Fagen tempered with their wildest impulses with mainstream pop techniques. Consequently, there are very few of the jazz flourishes that came to distinguish their albums. The breakthrough single, Do It Again, does work an impressively tight Latin jazz beat, and Reelin' in the Years has jazzy guitar solos and harmonies, and the production is overly polished, conforming to all the conventions of early 70s radio. Of course, that gives these decidedly twisted songs a subversive edge, but compositionally, these aren't as innovative as their later work. Even so, the best moments, Dirty Work, Kings, Midnight Cruisers, and Turn That Heartbeat Over Again, are wonderful pop songs that subvert traditional conventions and more than foreshadow the paths Steely Dan would later take.
All right. I never found the inclusion of the, I can't remember the other singer's name. He said it. But I never really thought it was a problem. I guess I was always a little bit confused as to why it was there. But since, you know, I never thought that Donald Fagen was a bad singer or anything like that. Maybe he just wasn't as confident in his abilities at this point yet.
Could be. So this album was released in November of 1972. The genres are jazz rock, soft rock, pop, folk, and folk rock. it was released on ABC Records and produced by Gary Katz. And there's 10 songs on the album, and they're divided between the sides evenly. So it starts with the song Do It Again, and side one finishes with Only a Fool Would Say That. So if you're listening along, and we'll pause halfway through at after side one to discuss. And without further ado, here is the first song on the album, Do It Again. Ending side one with Only a Fool Would Say That. Yeah, really liking this album so far. I like Steely Dan, and I like this, the songs that I have heard, but I've never sat down and listened to a whole album of theirs. And this is really great. I mean, I do like the jazz elements of it for sure. I mean, that is really interesting that they're incorporating jazz into rock and
well, it's sort of they're approaching pop music from a jazz direction. I think probably my favorite album is the one that came right after this one, Can't Buy a Thrill.
Can't Buy a Thrill.
Sorry, the next one was Countdown to Ecstasy.
That's okay. Yeah.
That's a really good album.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people call Aja their favorite album. That one's a really good one, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they were actually pretty consistent putting out albums right through the 70s. Pretzel Logic. Trying to remember some of the other titles. They're not coming to me. But anyway, there's lots of them.
Yeah, and I was reading that they didn't... basically, the band is just Walter Becker and Donald Fagen, and they basically just hired different session musicians to play on everything. I think at this point, it was a full band. But yeah,
the first album, and I think into the second album, is there were still like leftovers from the band, but ultimately it was... The project was... Donald Fagen and Walter Becker. That was their thing. And and basically they wanted to make, you know, really good. They were jazz students. They're very definitely like New York art students sort of people. and they had like this, just they wanted to put out, you know, pop albums, and they wanted to make them as good as possible. So they, you know, get the best musicians they can think of. To sometimes they would like get for one guitar part, they would just like get in like multiple different guitar players to play the guitar part, and then they'd pick the one they liked the best. I think Jeff Skunk Baxter is still basically the guitar player for this album and into the next one.
Yeah, and he's played with everybody. I mean, he's
a really good guitar player. I mean, listen to the that sitar part and Do It Again, and the guitar break in Kings was really awesome. He's definitely he's a guitar player known amongst other guitar players. So he's not a household name, but you'll see him in interviews all the time.
Yeah, and he's had an interesting life too. Like he retired from music briefly to go work with the CIA or something. He did something like a code interpretation or something like that. Like he's had a very interesting life. Like he's very smart too. Like he knows all about that stuff. I think he has a degree in something. I'm not sure. But yeah, no, he's an interesting character. And, but yeah, no, and a great guitar player as well. And, the only songs that I knew of Steely Dan were Do It Again and Reelin' in the Years, really. I mean, I heard other things as well, too. But yeah, no, I'm really, they're really well-crafted songs.
They're really tight, but it's not like, well, some people think it is, but I don't see it as like being like overly pretentious tight. It's actually very...
No, because like it's not self-indulgent at all, really. Because the songs, they're really well-crafted pop songs, and they're not, you know, there's not like 20 minute guitar solos and drum solos and all this stuff. And all that stuff is good and that's cool and it has its place, but it's not like it, as long as it's done tastefully. And this is like, the song is the main thing. Like whatever guitar part or drum part or whatever it is, whatever it is, it has to serve the song. It has to fit right with the song. It can't be you showing off. It has to be, it has to make sense within the song. And I really, that's, it sounds simple, but it's honestly one of the hardest things to do.
It's really hard if you're one of these people. I mean, it sort of depends on how you sort of approach a music. It's really hard for some people, but for some other people, that's what they do, and that's actually comes easy to them. It really depends on, if it's not something you're used to doing, it's a very hard thing to learn to do, for sure.
Yeah, and I'm guilty of it. I'm guilty of, like, having, like, if I've written like a chord pattern, and like I've written these instrumental sort of songs, and if I'm writing a chord pattern, and it's very easy to just sort of like it coming up to a guitar solo, it's really easy to just sort of noodle and overplay like a pentatonic scale or something like that. But to come up with a guitar part that's simpler and not overplaying and fits the song, that's a challenge. And yeah, it's easy to just and do all that. That's fun and that's easy. It's much more difficult to come up with a simple line that just makes sense within the song. And that's what I hear here. That's what these guys are doing here is what I hear. It's like they're coming up with lines that just make sense for the song, and the song is the most important thing.
Mm, yeah. Yes. And I totally agree. That seems to be what everybody's doing, and they choose musicians that do that. And always have. And that's kind of the brilliance of Steely Dan. So it's all about crafting the song.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, huge amount of respect for that, because it's simple, but it's not easy.
Yeah, there is a difference.
We'll move on to the second half of the album, and it starts with the song. I definitely know this song. It's Reeling in the Years. So here we go. Okay, and ending the album with Turn That Heartbeat Over Again. Yeah, no, I'm really, really liking this album. I think if I had to pick a favorite song, it would probably be Change of the Guard. That's a really good song. What I like about that one is, like, the structure is a little different. It feels very much like a typical sort of 70s pop song, but through that so it has an intro and a verse and a chorus, but after the chorus it goes into this bridge part, and that's really an odd place to go to that bridge, especially after the first chorus, that da 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 da, that part, it's odd. And you're not expecting it, but it sounds so good when it happens. And that really captivated me. It's like, oh, there's something. It's like, okay, yeah, this is a good song. And then it goes to that. It's like, oh, that's different. That's different. Why are they doing that there? They should do that later in the song. It's like, but it's so cool.
Yeah. It's almost like a bridge, but it's not really, guess it's kind of like a bridge, but there's no real lyrics to it other than dot 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 with some maybe like vague background and yeah, but I know what you mean. It's cool, and the fact that it changes key there,
yeah it goes into a minor key there. Yeah
I like stuff like the I like the use of the lap steel and Fire in the Hole. I thought that was really cool, that especially. I mean, it's a little bit more traditional, like the song Brooklyn. Use of the pedal steel is a little bit more traditional in its use. Not badly used or anything like that, but it's almost out of place in Fire in the Hole, but it works really, really well.
Fire in the Hole, to me, that sounded almost like a Leon Russell sort of song. I got sort of like I guess Leon Russell's not really from New Orleans, but like a Leon Russell, Joe Cocker, Dr. John kind of vibe. I kind of got that from that. And I don't think there's a bad song on here.
Not really, no. That's kind of par for their albums, though. It's just not, honestly, they're overthinkers. So there's not really weak spots on their albums. There's some that are maybe a little bit overthought, but I can't think of anything where that really negatively affected anything. Ultimately, they don't really want to put anything out that they're not proud of. So,
yeah, I mean, that's very evident that they're very careful with what they do. There's not, and you know, that's that. I mean, I respect bands that just like go in and record whatever and play live and whatever. And, but there's also a craft to making a record. And as I was reading, the reason that most of the band quit and it became just Donald Fagen and Walter Becker is because they actually decided to stop playing live. And they sort of took the Beatles approach where they stopped playing live and focused more on making really good records.
They would eventually play live again, but again, that was years down the line. But it's partly to do with personalities too. I mean, there's nothing wrong with going into, it's part of the learning process is that sometimes you gotta suck before you're good. And when you play a whole bunch of songs and, you know, pick out the ones that are really good to be your hits or something like that, and the rest of the album is almost like filler. There's sometimes some gems in there too. But it's a neat sort of like picture book into like seeing where a band is at a certain amount of time. But I guess when it comes to like Donald Fagen and Walter Becker, their personality just wasn't that. Their personality was, we're going in here and we're perfectionists. We're going to needle this down until we find it's right.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And there's an art that, you know, like, yeah, that's exactly what I was saying. Like there's an art to making records as opposed to playing live. And they decided, well, we're going to make records. We're going to, and even going in and making, like when bands play live and make a record, it's two different, totally different things. I think maybe people have an idea that, well, a band just goes to the studio and they just play and record. Like, no, it's not that simple, really. There's definitely, like, you can do that, and some of the best albums are made that way. But there's also this whole other thing of, yes, you know, work on playing the song live, but also, like, make the best recording that you can. And there's definitely there's an art to that, and there's it's definitely a craft. And I think these guys are, I mean, just the fact that this is their first album, and they're, you know, they're putting all these like different instruments and layers and experimenting with song structure. I mean, it's just, I don't know of any other band that would take those, or not take those chances, but even have the wisdom to make those choices.
Yeah. It's, if I were to compare them, like painting, most bands probably, you know, with some exceptions here and there, with some variations on the thing, of course. But I guess most bands would probably approach songwriting almost like Jackson Pollock, kind of to throw paint on the canvas or whatever you're painting and seeing what sort of comes out, you know. And some are more like Picasso, some are other. But I look at Steely Dan almost like, someone who's very precise. I am
like Vermeer or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking it was a Canadian reference, but it's Claude Toussaint, who did like, you know, pop art and like spirals and stuff like that. But he was so precise mm-hmm. on his line stroke and everything. It looks like a machine did it, but he did it. He did it himself. it's sort of like the that kind of an approach to do it and to make it perfect.
I don't know much about these guys, but I think it seems like they definitely had a vision of what they wanted to do right from the start. And like you were saying, they were like art students, New York art students. So, you know, that totally makes sense. So the question, and I think I know the answer, but would you listen to this again?
Oh, I have.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, lots of times. But yeah, yes, it's a
definitely,
good one.
Definitely would. Yeah.
And I definitely recommend some of their other albums as well. So
I'm really, really impressed. I mean, I didn't know a lot of Steely Dan before this, but I'm very, very impressed. And the fact that this is their first album, I mean, that's just...
I know. That's know. Another thing. It's just like, the first album is usually a little bit janky here and there, and it's forgivable because it's a first album. It can still be really good, but this is like, you know, right out of the gate. This is what we do. You know, we're already really good at it.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. So I guess we'll end the show there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. We want to hear from you, whether you agree or disagree with our review of the album. You can always reach out to us by going to the contact page over the website, polyphonicpress.com. And, you know, while you're there, you can check out previous episodes and everything like that. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do that by going to buymeacoffee.com/polyphonicpress. It's really easy. You don't need to sign up for anything. All those links are in the show notes. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.